Herzlich willkommen zu Personality Talks, deinem Podcast für ein freies und inspiriertes Leben voller Persönlichkeit. Was will ich, wer bin ich und was brauche ich eigentlich für ein rundum zufriedenes Leben? Tue ich das, was ich liebe? Wenn du dir diese Fragen auch schon immer mal stellen wolltest und keine Angst vor den Antworten hast, dann bist du genau richtig hier bei uns. Ich bin Simone, 36 Jahre alt, Yoga- und Meditationslehrerin und habe zusammen mit meiner Freundin Sabine Personality Mag gegründet. Ein Online-Magazin rund um Persönlichkeitsentwicklung, Self-Care, Wellbeing, Wellness und Empowerment. Personality Talks ist der Podcast zum Magazin, in dem wir spannende Persönlichkeiten, Experten und Coaches zum Gespräch treffen, euch unsere Tipps für ein erfülltes Leben verraten und voneinander lernen. Hallo und herzlich willkommen im neuen Jahr. Happy 2022. Ich freue mich sehr, denn mein heutiger Gast und mein erster Gast in diesem Jahr ist die großartige Mel Robbins. Mel Robbins ist Unternehmerin, Mutter von drei Kindern und regelmäßige Kommentatorin beim Fernsehsender CNN. Sie ist Autorin mehrerer Bücher und einer ihrer TED-Talks inspirierte 27 Millionen Menschen dazu, ihr Leben zu verändern. In ihrem neuesten Buch, Die einfachste Gewohnheit der Welt, stellt die Autorin die High-Five-Methode vor, deren Essenz es ist, sich jeden Tag ein High-Five zu geben. Denn der Weg zu einem gesunden Selbstvertrauen beginnt bei uns selbst. Ich spreche mit Mel Robbins darüber, was sie besonders in den letzten zwei Jahren über ihre eigenen Gedanken gelernt hat. Warum die High-Five-Methode so powerful und simple zugleich ist und warum sie noch dazu auch wissenschaftlich belegbar ist. Und wir sprechen darüber, warum es so wichtig ist, dass wir an uns selbst glauben. Ich wünsche euch viel Freude mit der inspirierenden Mel Robbins. A really warm welcome to the podcast Personality Talks, Mel Robbins.
Well, hey, thank you for having me.
We are really lucky to have you, Mel, because for the ones who don't know you, it is possible to check your website, to see your Instagram with over 1 million followers. You are a best-selling author, you are a motivational speaker, but apart from all of that we can read, what would you say, who is Mel Robbins now?
Oh, wow. Starting with the big existential questions. let's see, you know, it's interesting. I just consider myself a person who has really struggled a lot and for far too long. And once I started discovering simple things that move the needle on my own mental health and sense of fulfillment and ability to take control of areas of my life, once I started discovering that for myself, I just wanted to share it with anybody that would listen, in the hopes that it would save somebody the amount of heartache and headache that I needlessly caused myself. You know, when you start to struggle in life, whether it's anxiety or self-doubt or just feeling stuck, all of which are very normal parts of the human experience, it's easy to get trapped there. I know I did for years because I didn't understand what these things were, and I didn't understand the role that your nervous system and that your thinking patterns can play in either having you spin in circles or having you be able to break free of what's keeping you feeling disempowered and change the way that you think and change your habits. And so that's probably a long-winded way to say that I just view myself as a person that's on the path. And that for whatever reason, I've come into your life in this moment because you're listening to this podcast. And it's because there is something that we will share today, or you'll hear us talking about, that will be like a light on the path shining in the direction that you need to walk.
What was the main struggle that you had, if you could, if it's possible, if you could like sum that up?
Yeah, I can sum it up very easily now that I know everything that I know. The main struggle that I had is that I had stored trauma in my nervous system from an experience when I was 9 years old. Mm-hmm. And it's a experience, unfortunately, that is way too common for boys and girls. And that is that I had an older kid molest me while I was sleeping. And, you know, on the kind of spectrum of things that can happen to a human being, this was honestly very mild. I was confused. I didn't know what was happening. It happened in the middle of the night. It was a kid, not an adult. It was a one-time incident. I didn't feel like my life was in danger. I just woke up from a dead sleep. A thing that, by the way, when you're sleeping, you're safe, right? You're not nervous. Mm-hmm. You're not upset. You might, even if you're in a scary dream, you're not really present that you are. And mm-hmm. so you're in a state of ultimate peace and relaxation. And so I wake up and there's a kid, you know, on top of me, and I'm 9. I've never had an experience like this. Mm-hmm. And my nervous system, of course, takes over. It sounds the alarm. Something's wrong. And I remember I looked to my right and my brother was sleeping on the bunk bed kind of next to me. We were at this kind of big family weekend ski thing. And and all the kids were in a big bunk room. And I just instinctually left my body. I disassociated. And this is what your body is designed to do. Anxiety is a really good thing when you understand it, because anxiety is just an alarm system. So I wake up to a kid on top of me. I have an anxiety response. My body sounds the alarm in my nervous system. And in those moments, you either run or you freeze. Fight or flight, right? Mm-hmm. So I have a normal response to a threatening situation. That's what happened. And the very next morning, and before I go on, I think it's really important to understand that I personally believe that at the heart of every single pattern that you can't seem to change or break free of, you have stored trauma in mm-hmm. your nervous system that you have not identified and you have not smoothed out. And mm-hmm. that nervous system response is now, as an adult, the thing that keeps you trapped. See, as a kid, me having a response of, oh my God, you know, this is like, that was appropriate and important. The problem for me is that the next morning I had a second nervous system response related to it. And this second nervous system response is what has trapped me in a pattern of people pleasing or lying or being afraid of upsetting people that dominated my life for decades. So I go down the stairs the next morning. After I wake up, I get down the stairs, my mom's standing there cooking breakfast, and she says, how'd you sleep? Now, I immediately knew I wanted to say something. And I wasn't afraid of telling my mom. Mm-hmm. But out of the corner of my eye, I saw the kid that had been on top of me. And my nervous system sent the anxiety alarm mm-hmm. in that moment. And that's appropriate because I didn't know this kid, and I was uncertain about what he would do mm-hmm. if he heard me say something. Mm-hmm. And so my nervous system sounded the alarm. And just like the night before, where I literally disassociated and left my body, I did the same thing in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And I felt myself, instead of saying, that son of a bitch climbed on top of me, mom. And I would have watched mm-hmm. my mom take that spatula and knock that kid into next week. I mean, there's yeah. no question what she would have done.
Yeah.
But I felt the wave of uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And my response in my 9-year-old brain was say nothing. And I said, fine. And what got locked in that singular moment defined me for the next probably 30 years, 40 years even, in a moment of uncertainty, lie. In a moment of uncertainty, when you don't know what somebody's going to do, when you think somebody's going to get upset, just keep the peace. And what you need to understand that I didn't understand about trauma is that we're all sitting here talking about the things that we want to change. And when you're talking about the things that you want to change, you use the prefrontal cortex, you know, like your forehead, you're paying attention, you're very present to what you're talking about. And it could be anything. You could say, I don't want to keep eating after 10 o'clock at night because I'm eating because I'm lonely. Or you could say, I don't want to keep snapping at my kids. Or you could say, you know, I don't want to drink so much. But then you get into the situation and your body gets triggered and you feel lonely. And now you're not conscious to what you're doing. Your nervous system takes over and you just do these patterns subconsciously. And I didn't understand that honestly until about 5 years ago.
So first, thank you for telling that story and sharing it with us. And when you said, like, you believe that all of these patterns that we have and the things we are not able to go out of and to do the things we want to do, that they are caused by a trauma we experienced somehow. So, and in most of the cases, I would say it's not like that the people have had so much insight in themselves and like working and finding out what is it, what was it. It is not always perhaps a case that you can remember or whatever. So where do you, when you work with the people who say, I want to lose weight, I want to triple my income, or I want to have a lucky marriage, how you work with them to find out what was the thing back then that has now such a big weight on their lives?
You got to start with the feeling. It's an excellent question. Mm-hmm. And so a couple things I want to say about this. Number one, you don't have to remember the original thing. Mm-hmm. You don't. Because the cool thing about trying to figure this out is that my therapist explained to me that you need to think about this sort of what psychologists call it is a dysregulated nervous system. Mm-hmm. You have two nervous systems. You have what's called the sympathetic nervous system, mm-hmm. which is your alert, on edge, fight or flight, oh my gosh, you know, kind of going like edgy nervous system. And honestly, after 2 years of living through a global pandemic, I think most people's nervous systems are now permanently kind of in this like on edge, mm-hmm. Alerted state. Mm-hmm. It's why we're all so burnt out because we're not designed to live in that state of being on edge all the time. The second nervous system that you have is called the parasympathetic nervous system. And this nervous system is your resting nervous system. So when I was sleeping, my parasympathetic nervous system came up. I'm calm and rested. Mm-hmm. When I awake and I'm, you know, in a situation of, you know, having another kid on top of me, your sympathetic alert nervous system goes on. That's important. It's there. It's designed to protect you. And the next morning, when I was in a situation where I felt uncertain about how somebody would respond, I went from feeling safe with my mom to suddenly the sympathetic nervous system flipping on, and now I'm in a state of being on alert and on edge. Mm-hmm. So understanding that you have two nervous systems, and the secret to healing, in my opinion, is identifying the situations or the people that put you on edge. Mm-hmm. And then learning how to take your nervous system from an on edge state and flipping yourself back into a grounded, calm, resting state, mm-hmm. so that you are not triggered by the stuff that's going on around you. Because the problem for most of us is we're unaware of why we're so triggered. We're unaware of why we're getting frustrated. We're unaware of why we engage in patterns of behavior, because we're being triggered at a feeling level, not a, you know, action level. Mm-hmm. So, I'll give you an example. So my husband and I have been talking a lot recently about this, and he has shared with me that one of the things that he is learning about himself is that, you know, being the youngest of three boys and having two parents that worked, he grew up and he'd come home from elementary school, nobody was home. and they were all busy, and that he had the distinct sense as a kid that nobody cared, nobody was around, his needs didn't matter, because even when he asked for what he needed, nobody did anything about it. Like, he tells the story about how when he was 8 years old, he was super sick, came home from school. His parents didn't even drive to go get him. They were both at work in the city, so they arranged for like a cab or something to drive him home. I can't even imagine that happening in today's world. He gets home, he's sick. They get home from work, and then they are going to drive up to go ski for the weekend. And in the car, they're rattling him. You're not that sick. Why did da-da-da-da? He proceeds to power vomit all over the whole car, over the dog, over this, over that. And he kind of tells the story, and almost as if he had summoned up getting sick to prove it to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And this opinion that he had based on the circumstances of his childhood is that nobody cares about me. Nobody. So why even bother saying anything? So this is how it plays out in our marriage. We've been married 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
We have a house that has a garage underneath the house. And so whenever, you know, the mailman delivers Amazon boxes or whatever, mm-hmm. I bring him in the front door. I cut open the boxes, and then I throw the boxes at the top of the stairs on the way down to the garage. And I literally gather them all there because I can't stand to flatten boxes. I don't want to have to do it one at a time. So I gather a big pile of them, and then I do it all at once. For years, I had no idea that this bothered my husband. For years, he would see me stack a box and then stack another box and then go on with my day. And he would feel like I was waiting for him to take them down. And he had asked me a couple times, could you just take him down the stairs? And I would be like, yeah. And then I'd forget. And every time he saw this stack of cardboard boxes, it would literally be like a tower, you know, like a Jenga tower I'm building. Yeah. That basically said, nobody cares about me. They think that it's my job to do this stuff. Even though I've asked, see, I've asked my wife, just like she didn't listen. Now, is he consciously connecting the dots with the stuff that went down when he was, no.
Mm-mm.
But what happens is, seeing those cardboard boxes after asking your spouse to please freaking take care of them and having it not happen conjures up a feeling in his body, a feeling that is very familiar. And that feeling is, nobody cares about me. And this is a feeling he's had for a very, very long time. And so this is why it's important. Step one is identify the places in your life where you have patterns of thinking or behavior that don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And then ask yourself, when have I felt like this before? When have I felt like this before? And this is a really confronting thing to do, because mm-hmm. the first time you ask yourself, all right, it bothers me that my spouse stacks cardboard boxes up by the stairs. When have I felt this way before? You're not going to know right away, but you need to sit with it. When have I, and then start asking yourself, well, what exactly am I feeling?
Mm-hmm.
What exactly is the thing that I'm feeling? Like, I noticed, I'll give you another example. Because what Chris was feeling when he sees those is he feels disrespected. He feels ignored.
Mm-hmm.
He feels like there's no point in asking for what he needs. He feels like nobody listens to him. You can kind of identify that in the present. Then ask yourself, mm-hmm. well, when have I felt ignored? When have I, you know, is there a situation that's coming up for you as you listen to this, Simone?
Directly. I had so also mean? When it, I just had a situation half an hour ago where we had like a situation where our little 3 year old didn't want to eat and he was screaming and he freaked out. And then in this situation, I got like in a conversation with my husband and I said, oh, I feel exhausted. And he was saying, it's not that bad. And I got triggered. I got triggered really bad. And I was like out of the nervous system, and I reacted like loud and not as I wanted to react, because I got triggered that he said, or it's not that bad, or, and I felt like, and that is my story, I felt like he's not listening. It is not interesting in that moment. It doesn't count, but it had at the end nothing to do with the situation.
Yeah, exactly. I guarantee you, I could probably predict, having worked with so many people, that it was either that your parents or one of your caregivers was way too busy. Yeah. So they were constantly like, you're fine, you're fine, you're fine.
You're fine. Exactly. Yeah.
So nobody validated your feelings. All you needed your husband to say is, you're right. I'm sorry,
exactly.
Babe.
Yeah.
That's it. And so your is more that you don't feel seen or gotten.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Totally. We all have this in some way. I can tell you, if I don't call my mom every 3 days, I got to call her, because if it's day 4 or 5, heaven forbid, 6 or 7, mm-hmm. When she picks up the phone, she has a tone of voice, and the tone of voice is basically like, oh, you've been busy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're finally calling. And you want to just go and like yell at somebody when they say that. But what they're actually expressing is that they don't feel important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something I did. That's something that's been there for a long time. And so mm-hmm. the way that my therapist explained this to me is that these sort of feelings that make your nervous system go on edge, you know, trauma feels like a heavy word. Trauma is a very simple thing, and it happens to everybody. Trauma is simply when your nervous system goes on edge and starts recording what's happening as a way to protect you. That's all that trauma is. It's a response in your nervous system recording an event. And then the problem is we all get stuck there. And what my therapist explained to me, and I love this visual, is that think about it as if in your nervous system, there are clusters of grapes that mm-hmm. grow off of your nervous system. The first grape at the top of the cluster is, you know, your mom telling you, oh, it's not that bad, right? Or for me, waking up and that kid's there. And then the second cluster is me walking down the stairs the next morning and feeling uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
And the next, and so they just keep popping and popping and popping off the same experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so my husband's had a million times in his life where he has felt, nobody cares about my feelings, so why bother even asking?
Mm-hmm.
Because the feeling of it is stored in the nervous system. What's great about starting to unpack this is that when you start to see the patterns, you can start to label the patterns instead of labeling yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to work breaking those patterns and replacing them. And, you know, in the case of my husband, what he did is he sat me down and said, when you don't take those things down, let me tell you how it makes me feel. It makes me feel like you don't care. It makes me feel like you think I'm the maid. It makes me feel disrespected. I'm like, wait, are we talking about the cardboard boxes over here?
Crazy. Yeah.
And he's like, yes. And so when I finally understood what my behavior was doing for him, then woke me up to go, oh, no problem. I don't want you to feel that way, especially about something stupid like cardboard boxes. Done. Easy. Never had them stacked there again. Mm-hmm. Because it's simple when you, and it's empowering when you understand why somebody is getting triggered in that way. And it's an important thing to do in your relationships and for your relationship with yourself.
But it's a wonderful proof for, on one hand, for digging deep into your own self, where there's a lot of people saying, you don't need to understand everything. You don't need to look so deep, but also in understanding the people around you, but about what they are controlled from earlier life on. So, but let's talk about the high five habit, Mel. The book, The High Five Habit, Take Control Over Your Habit, Take Control Over Your Life, sorry, with One Simple Habit. And I got stuck on the page where it was written that you you wrote it down yourself. You are a motivational speaker and a best-selling author, and you wrote that book, but what you are telling about that you didn't know what to tell to yourself to get motivated. What was the missing piece that you could get motivated?
So, you know, I've been really successful in the last 10 years. I have worked my ass off, and I've built a huge business, and I've impacted millions of people's lives. And what I could never fix or change, though, was the way I spoke to myself. I was proud of myself. I would stop and celebrate whenever I would win or achieve something. But my default was to focus on what was wrong and to criticize absolutely everything that I was doing to myself. And everybody has this exact same problem, that secretly we are just destroying ourselves in, like, with our own voice. Ugh, look at how you look. Ugh, look at, you didn't do this. Oh, it's near the end of the year and you haven't done that. Like, just constantly griping and punching yourself mentally. And I was no different. And I had a lot of success, but I didn't have as much fun and the level of joy and contentment that I could have. Mm-hmm. I had achieved a ton of things and I had changed a lot and I had made a huge impact. But in terms of feeling proud of myself or feeling like accepting and supportive of myself, absolutely not. When I looked in the mirror, I saw all the things I hated about myself. I saw, you know, the wrinkles, I saw the gray hair, I saw the things I'd want to fix. I saw what I didn't have in terms of a physical appearance. I also saw the mistakes that I had made, the things I wish I could change. I literally would constantly criticize myself. And I know, based on our research, everybody does this. I don't care who you are.
Would you say, I have a question that just came up, would you say that this, since you changed this, the self-talk, the thoughts about yourself, that also had an impact of how you're appearing even on your face expressions?
Because 1,000%.
Because I just looked up the TED Talk before we started that interview, and I love it for sure. We need to say that 28 million people watched that talk, but I saw a completely different woman to who you are now. There's a for sure beautiful woman there and encouraging and motivating people on stage and going there with a lot of power. But seeing you now, even for the people on the website, there's a completely different eyes.
Like, it's weird.
In a really nice way. Yeah.
Yeah. And friends of mine that have known me for decades have said recently, you literally look like you're 10 years younger than you are. Mm-hmm. Because you seem at peace. You seem grounded. You seem just comfortable. And here's how I would put it. If I spent the first 52 years of my life looking in the mirror and seeing a person that I either judged or hated, or thinking about myself and I'd think about all the things I wish I could change or wish I had done differently, after practicing the high five habit, which is simply adding a high five in the mirror to your morning routine every single morning, after this simple habit, I now wouldn't even dawn on me to criticize myself. Not because I'm arrogant or because I'm perfect, but because I actually see myself as a person who's a good person and who's trying her best and who deserves to be encouraged and cared for. You know, very much like our kids. My kids piss me off every day. It does not change how I see them. When they walk in the room, even when I'm angry at them, I still love them. I don't ever stop cheering for them. It would not occur to me to look in the mirror and focus on what I think they should fix. I just see a human being I love. And by raising my hand every morning and high-fiving my reflection, I literally have reprogrammed the default settings in my mind. I have brand new neural pathways. I have changed how I talk to myself. I changed what I believe about myself. And I will tell you, feeling empowered and supported and seen, it is the most motivating and inspiring force on the planet. And I didn't realize how much of my success was driven by either insecurity or just this relentless need to be busy doing something, because I believed that my worth as a human being was a function of what I was doing, not just because I was breathing. And what the high five habit and having an intentional act every morning where I look in the mirror and I raise my hand and I high five my reflection and have my own brain watch me do it, it has made me believe that our sense of worth must come from within, and you are worthy simply because you're breathing.
And for me, it was really interesting also to read that in the moment we give a high five, it is not even possible to think something like, oh my gosh, I have wrinkles, or oh my gosh, how shitty I look. Why is that?
Because oh, it's that amazing. Is like, it's crazy. Is that what you experienced?
Yes, but also like you explain, can you explain that? Why is it not possible? Why is it is like, that was convincing me a lot.
The science here is kind of crazy. So this is very simple. Yes. This also sounds stupid. I get it. And you're talking to a woman that is also a big believer in science and research. Mm-hmm. And what I'm going to tell you is this simple habit has so much science that it's just going to blow your mind. First of all, there's a whole field of research. Let me explain it this way. There's a whole field of research called neurobics. Neurobics is taking a new thought pattern and marrying it with unexpected physical activity. And researchers who study the brain have discovered that it's the fastest way to forge new neural pathways in your mind. And so when you go to high five yourself in the mirror, something you normally would never do, it's unexpected. And what's super cool about it is you shouldn't even think anything when you're doing it, because you want all of the neural association that your brain already has with a high five to fuse with your own reflection. And you want all of that neural association to do the heavy lifting for you. So one of the reasons why mantras don't work, you know, you beat yourself up all day long, you trash yourself at work, you pick yourself apart. You can't stand in front of a mirror and then go, I'm amazing, and believe it. And the reason why you won't believe it, simply saying it, is because your own actions prove otherwise. When you start to high five yourself in the mirror, your brain is watching. It's an action that demonstrates you believe in yourself. You've never once high fived a human being and thought, I hate you, I hope you lose, today's going to be a terrible day. A high five is only positive. It's only optimistic. It is only something that you do for somebody that you support. And so when you do it to yourself, your brain's watching. And so your brain's like, oh, wait a minute. Wait, did you just see that? Simone is not criticizing herself. Simone just high-fived herself. Simone likes herself now. Oh, wait, we are now cheering for herself. Okay, I got this. So it's all of the programming that's already in your brain about a high five that now gets married with your reflection. And that's not all. The second thing is, your brain always gives you a drip of dopamine when you give or get a high five. And so when you first start doing it, you'll either smile or laugh. That's mm-hmm. the dopamine releasing in your brain. That's why, even though it's corny or cheesy or sounds dumb, you can't help but admit it boosts your mood. That's the dopamine. Your nervous system gives you a jolt of celebratory energy. That is why you feel a little shift in sort of your willpower. Even on the worst days, you're feeling overwhelmed and you give yourself a high five, you will feel this energetic shift. Mm-hmm. And you'll feel like, okay, I know my life is really hard right now, but I know I can face it. And you'll head into your day with that kind of energy. Not like, whoa, we got this, but like, okay, no matter what happens, I got my own back. Let's go.
So one thing is you discovered that for yourself and you're doing it since that time, you're high-fiving yourself. But what happened inside when you wrote the book? Because doing it and discovering it for yourself and working with it, but then putting it into a book and releasing it out there is another dimension. What happened since then inside?
It's just absolutely extraordinary. We've had 153,000 people from 91 countries complete something that I call the high five challenge, which is just wake up every day and begin your day with a high five in the mirror. 153,000 people in 48 days, not a single one of them said it didn't work. Not one. Every single person that has tried this has reported shocking changes. Everything from people writing to us saying this is having a profound effect in me being able to stop suicidal ideation. We've got people sharing how in AA meetings around the world, folks are standing up saying, you've got to add a high five because it's helping with the shame. It's like an act of forgiveness to high five yourself. You're not saying, yeah, I'm happy. I'm, you know, screwed up my life. You're saying, no, I see you and I'm still going to cheer for you. You deserve to heal. Mm-hmm. We have people using it with their kids. We have people using it with teams at work. You know, the implications of this are endless because none of us realize just how hard we are on ourselves. And none of us know how to be kinder. None of us know how to love ourselves. And so this is an action that demonstrates it. We have people that have written to us about the fact that they've been struggling with body dysmorphia for 20 years, can't look at themselves in the mirror, and simply starting this high five habit, which, you know, the first day or two, they're kind of looking away. But by day three, your own brain is going, you got to look at the person when you high five, because your brain knows what a high five is. And so by day five, somebody who hasn't been able to look at themselves in the mirror is not only seeing themselves, they are smiling.
One thing I need to know is when I read about you, about what you did in your life, and you had these 5 years at CNN as a legal analyst and the time before as the attorney for legal aid, what made you switch? What made you kind of leave these things behind and go to the things that you are doing now?
Well, when I gave that TEDx talk, I was at CNN. And so what made me switch what I was doing from the law to being on television talking about a lot of the big legal cases here is real people started to write to me and say, this thing I heard you say in that TEDx talk has changed my life. And as emails from real people started to pour in, what happened is I felt a sense of responsibility to be able to better explain why what was then the 5 second rule, counting backwards, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 to interrupt bad habits and push yourself to take the actions to change and create new habits. I felt this sense of responsibility that I've put something out in the world. I don't even know why it works. And plus, people are starting to email me and write me Facebook messages. And if I ever expect to spend time with my family again, instead of spending every evening after work responding to people's emails, I better do a research project and get some basic FAQs down. And that led me to then write up a sheet of FAQs. And then that led me to survey people. And then that led me to do even more research. And because I was at CNN, I mean, people return your phone calls when you work there. And so, you know, a lot of the experts were responding back. And so I got access to really smart people that helped me understand then. We're talking, you know, 2014, 15, 16. And then as the TEDx talk started to explode online, people started asking me to speak. And turns out I'm really good at it. And so next thing you know, I'm not only no longer able to be on CNN because I've said yes to so many speeches, but it's what I'm clearly meant to do. Mm-hmm. And as I'm doing speeches, I'm now realizing I have no time to answer emails, period. I need to put this into a book. And so I write the book, I self-publish the book. I never expected that the book would be anything other than just a tool to help somebody, you know, something that they might get at a speech that I was doing for a corporate. I never expected it to become this global phenomenon. But the 5-second rule went on to sell over 2 million copies. It's been translated into 36 languages. This is in less than 5 years. And I'm a self-published author. And it became very clear that I was put on this earth to find and share the stories and the tools and the research that really help people make sense of very complicated problems and to take action.
Really nice. There is always like three questions that we have like in every podcast and or in every episode. And the first one is, what do you think, what do we have too much of in this world?
We have too much external stimulus. So I think one of the most important things to understand is that your attention and where you direct it is one of your most important commodities. And if you feel like you don't have enough time, if you feel like you're last on your list, if you feel like everything is overwhelming, if you feel like there's never enough time, I know that you actually have a problem with clarity. You are not clear about what actually matters to you. And because you're not clear about what matters to you, your attention is easily hijacked by things that don't matter. And one of the things that doesn't matter is the noise on social media and the noise in the news and the noise around gossip and the noise around drama at work. And we all spend way too much time giving our attention to that. And we need to get clearer about what matters to us and become way more focused on directing our time and energy toward those things.
And what would you say, what do we need more in the world?
We need more kindness. Kindness towards self, kindness towards others. You know, they did this study about behavior changes that have a impact on your fulfillment and your happiness. And the single biggest behavior change that has the biggest impact on your fulfillment and happiness as a human being is kindness toward yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's where the high five habit comes in. And ironically, kindness toward yourself is the one behavior change we practice the least. Every one of us will start meditating or we'll drink our kale smoothies or we'll exercise or we'll, and all those things are very important and they have a big impact on the quality of your life. But the one thing that changes everything is being kind to yourself, because your relationship with yourself is the foundation for everything you feel and experience in life.
And do you think we as a generation who understood this now or is learning about this now more is able to transport that to the kids?
I think that I think we have the capability of doing it. Mm-hmm. You see, we're hard on ourselves because we learned to do that from our parents. Mm-hmm. Our parents were hard on themselves. Their parents were hard on themselves. And we have an opportunity, thankfully, because of podcasts and online magazines like this, mm-hmm. to break patterns of behavior and thinking that no longer serve us or future generations. And one pattern of behavior that no longer serves you and certainly will not serve the future generation is the fact that you're cruel to yourself. You're relentless on yourself. You are mean to yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you could adopt a habit of being kind to yourself, it would change everything. And the only way that your kids will learn how to be kind to themselves, which I think we all want as parents, is if you're modeling it with yourself. Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of practice. What would you say, who was your biggest inspiration? A therapist, a person, a book, an author, whatever. We always ask for a book that inspired the person, but perhaps it is not a book, perhaps it is, or it is a person that you would say, this speech, meeting led me to my way.
I think that the biggest source of inspiration in my life, and I think if you really stop and allow yourself to embrace this idea, the biggest source of inspiration is the human being that's staring back at you in the mirror every morning. There is somebody there. Mm-hmm. It's a human being. It's not your reflection. There's two of you in the bathroom every morning, and there is a person in the mirror that you've been ignoring. Somebody who's trying very hard, who's tired of your criticism. And if you could just shut up for a second and look that human being in the eyes and see somebody who has huge dreams and who has a great heart and who needs your support, I think when you can make that connection with yourself, you will become your own source of inspiration.
Ah, really nice. Wonderful. Mel, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We were honored to have you
to talk about your books, and we recommend the High Five Habit to all the listeners and to check out your website and dive a little bit deeper into your work. And
you know, I should probably tell you that my maiden name is Schneeberger.
Nice. Yeah. So thank you so much. And especially thanks for your work and being so open about your stories and what you experienced.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Thank
you. Be a little kinder to yourself, young lady.
Yes.
Ihr Lieben, was für eine Frau, was für ein Gespräch, was für eine Inspiration und ein großartiges Buch, Die einfachste Gewohnheit der Welt. Übernehmen Sie die Kontrolle über Ihr Leben mit der High-Five-Habit-Methode von Millionen-Bestseller-Autorin Mel Robbins. Es war uns eine Ehre, dass sie da war, und wir danken der Münchner Verlagsgruppe GmbH und Laura, die das Gespräch möglich gemacht und organisiert hat. Vielen Dank dafür. Wir hoffen, ihr fandet das genauso inspirierend wie wir und können euch nur ans Herz legen, die TED-Talks von Mel Robbins anzuschauen. Wir freuen uns, dass ihr wieder dabei seid. Wir freuen uns, dass ihr zuhört. Und natürlich freuen wir uns wie immer, wenn ihr auf www.personalitymac.com vorbeischaut. Das Thema der aktuellen Ausgabe ist Flow, und da gibt es einiges zu lesen und wie immer auch zu lernen und zu erfahren. Wir freuen uns, wenn ihr uns auf Instagram folgt und abonniert, gerne auch fleißig mitkommentiert und unseren Newsletter abonniert. Das Personality Lab ist noch relativ neu. Auch da passieren in 2022 wunderbare Dinge. Es gibt Workshops, Masterclasses und Online-Kurse. Auch hier seid ihr am besten informiert, wenn ihr den Newsletter abonniert. Wir danken euch fürs Zuhören. Wir freuen uns natürlich wie immer über eine Bewertung, denn die sind ganz, ganz wichtig für uns. Und bis zum nächsten Mal. Alles Liebe, eure Simone.